Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Now it's time for Playing with Fire with Chef Tom and Stu at the new 104.7 WHLI. Brought to you by Santa Giada Pinot Grigio.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Tom. So our loyal listeners will be very, must have been very amused last week when we took a break and they got to listen to our banter that was supposed to be replaced by a commercial.
It never did, huh?
And fortunately, you didn't say anything bad.
Well, it's a good, that's a good thing, because I can get, you know, I tend to border on the profane occasionally, you know?
Yeah, well, we lucked out.
I think sometimes shucks just doesn't really express how you feel. You know, you need kind of a, you need something a little stronger, you know, when you bang your shin on the table or something. Shucks just doesn't seem to kind of release what needs to be released.
Not all the time.
Yeah. Anyway, how you doing? Good?
I'm doing good. So I had a really nice week of dining. I'd love to share with everybody.
Yeah, you're out more than I am these days.
So I was out and about during the week. I had to take my mom to a doctor's appointment. And I just thought that I hadn't spent enough time with her in recent times. So she said, "Do you want to grab a bite?" So I said, "Yes." I normally would be running back to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So we were on the South Shore in the Oceanside area. And I forget. We're going to grab a slice of pizza somewhere. And then she saw the Pantry Diner, which is the corner of
it's been around forever.
Long Beach Road and Merrick Road in that area. So we stopped in, and lo and behold, it wasn't surprising that during lunchtime, the place was pretty busy.
That's nice to hear.
And I guess the Pantry Diner had closed for a while. And then had reopened a couple of years ago or whatever. And what was interesting with the diner was they went with a no gratuity policy, I believe.
Really?
I guess it was built into the
Tipping included?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to know how, you know, how the wage structure was there. But
you know why they do that?
Why?
There's a semantical difference between a gratuity and a service charge. So if you call something a gratuity, you can only split that money with people who've touched the table, i.e. waitresses, busboys, something like that. If you call it a service charge, you can split that money any way you want. You can give some to the dishwashers, the cooks, whatever. And what's happened is over the years, the lawyers realized that, and they jumped on a lot of those places that were doing that. They were calling it a gratuity, and you know the banner headline was lawyers swooped in to save the poor downtrodden servers from being screwed by the evil managers or management. And a lot of times that wasn't the case. I'm sure it was the case in some, because there are some unscrupulous people out there. But it wasn't largely the case. Largely what happened was they called it a gratuity, and in trying to make it fairer, you know, for the guys in the kitchen, you have waiters that would come into these high-end restaurants, and they come in at 3 o'clock to set up, and by 10 they're out of there with $500-$600 in their pocket. Meanwhile, the dishwasher's there 12 hours, he's making $100. So what they were trying to do was take some of that, you know, tipping money and make it a little, you know, help the, you know, the guys in the kitchen a little bit. And lawyers swooped in and got everybody, and they got some of the big guys like Mario Batali and Danielle for millions and millions of dollars in back, quote unquote, pay that was never given to the waiters there, which really wasn't the case in a lot of the cases. So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's all good. So, I mean, the Pantry Diner is it's actually located not far from South Nassau Hospital
sure,
in
yeah,
that
yeah.
area. So it gets a lot of I guess, families that are visiting and stuff like that. Sentimentally for me, when my dad was in the hospital a couple of years ago, we actually had a Thanksgiving meal there because it just was a tough time and
sure,
it was convenient.
Yeah,
and again, I was the food there is usually very good. So at any rate, so we go in, we get a table, and I was so pleasantly surprised about the experience, and I'll detail some of it. First of all, when you walk in, they were courteous and nice, sat
sure,
you
yeah.
down.
It's a good idea.
They bring to the table, and part of this might be nouveau in the sense that everybody's still dealing with COVID procedures, but they brought what I guess was like a bread basket,
mm-hmm.
but in it was your napkin and your cutlery or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they served the water, but they did it nicely. It was like in a whiskey glass. So you got a glass with ice.
Yeah.
And a wine cap.
Carafe. Yeah.
Carafe with your water. It was quaint. It was nice.
Right.
And then the staff was just over the top. When they serve your meal, mm-hmm. they actually wheeled it out on a cart, which was pretty cool. Nice effect.
Yeah.
And I got a real kick out of somebody at another table had ordered something that I guess they brought mustard and ketchup to the table. And the waitress actually, you know, off to the side, like, made sure that, like, there was something in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't still have the silver foil. Because it was funny. It was a restaurant brand. But if you quickly looked at it, you thought it was Heinz mustard
yeah, yeah,
and ketchup.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But again, it was just over the top, just very nice, very attentive. And what was also interesting, it was, again, it's a diner. But there seemed to be a lot of people that were doing cocktails there.
Really?
So I don't know if that's the image that it's, you know, it's trying to be more of a restaurant.
It's a finer diner.
A finer diner. Not that you've ever strayed from that.
No.
And again, I guess this time of year there was a lot of graduations and stuff. So maybe that added to the frivolity of it
sure,
all.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But again, just an incredible experience, more over the top than I would have expected.
Sure.
So that was one day. And then I had another heart-touching meal. One of the girls here at the radio station, her parents used to be wine merchants.
Oh, yeah.
They worked for Peerless, I think.
Peerless, yeah.
And that was in, I guess, the office or whatever, or the territory was Williamsburg. So her parents have passed, and my parents would always do a lot of local traveling, and they would sometimes stop in Williamsburg for dinner or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And two of their choices would be Peter Luger's, because
it's this.
There's such a difference between Peter Luger's and Williamsburg in Great Neck, but still there's a consistency that's really incredible. But the other go-to place was Bamonti's.
Oh, Bamonti's, yeah.
Which is, as you would say, a red sauce Italian restaurant
sure.
that's been around for 100 and something years. So we had made reservations and we went there. And it was a real treat. Actually, I'm hoping that maybe we can get somebody from the family to join us on the show when they do a call-in. But, again, what an interesting evening.
Which Parmesan did you have?
That's actually funny. So I had actually done some research. I read a couple of reviews, and we actually started with what they call Clams Casino, which was essentially baked clams.
Peppers and bacon. And
but it was with a red sauce.
That's different, yeah.
And like a slab of bacon on top.
Yeah, yeah.
And as the review had suggested, you know, you pull the piece of bacon off and you eat that separately. But
it's like
that
two
was,
appetizers.
But it was a little different because, again, it was with like a pomodoro sauce.
Hmm.
So that was cool to start. They also in the review suggested the ravioli. And the raviolis, I guess, must be normally like one by ones. You know, they're
yeah,
pretty
yeah.
small.
Yeah.
These were two by twos.
Oh, they're big, yeah.
So we had that as like a second appetizer. And then to your question, we ended up with the pork chop parmesan. Which was a little different. I mean, you usually
sure, yeah,
go
yeah.
with the chicken or
yeah,
the
yeah.
veal or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Well done. And it was very funny because they split everything in the kitchen, which was very nice. I thought it was more of a family-style restaurant, but I was wrong. But they split everything for us, which was always very nice.
Sure.
And the waiter comes out and he jokes. He gives the woman I'm with her half, and mine had the bone. And he goes, I could not share the bone.
Yeah, I'm one of sores, you know. I left my sores all home.
But it was, again, it was heartfelt because my parents, and I guess I'm going to have to sneak. I can't talk about it, but maybe this is the way to sneak it. I'm going to take my mom there in a couple of weeks.
Oh, nice.
So if you're listening, Mom, you'll have a good meal.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting mix of people. There was, you know, the neighborhood people, which are hipsters now.
Of course, yeah.
And then you had the people that just always would be there. So just a great evening. And what's also cool about the restaurant, it's many times been the locale for a television show set shooting. And I guess that many times if a series is being filmed in New York, they for whatever reason gravitate there.
Yeah.
So it was cool to, again, just two really nice meals.
That's great. I mean, I love, you know, I like Italian restaurants. I think probably it's maybe my favorite cuisine to eat out. I love the new American stuff, you know, but, you know, Italian food, when it's done well, when it's done like it's done in Italy, I just love it. I don't think there's anything better. I mean, tomatoes and cream and cheeses. I mean, Reggiano is like the king of all cheeses. It's just fabulous stuff, you know, and there's so much you can do with it, you know. Pasta reminds me a little of fish in that there are so many different types and shapes and sauces and ways to put it together that we in America don't generally explore enough. I mean, it's, you know, here it's the usual, you know, bolognese and, you know, mushrooms, maybe something like that. Or, you know, they put peas in it and some ham, a prosciutto or whatever. But, you know, you go over to Italy, you know, you get pasta with potatoes in it. You'll get pasta with.
Well, that's interesting. So, you know, you go to the local pizza place or Italian restaurant.
Don't even say it. Don't say it. Don't say the pineapples.
No. They didn't serve it with pasta. Actually, the entree that we got, the pork chop, came with escarole and potato.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. But also, what's so funny and classic is the bread was nothing to speak about there.
Yeah.
It was, you know, just regular Italian bread and the squares of butter in the
foil.
Yeah.
Continental. Continental butters. But, you know, it's funny you say that because I do veal chop parmesan sometimes, you know, with the bone and all that, pound it out so it looks like a doormat, you know, thing's huge. And I never served that stuff with pasta, even chicken parmesan. I always serve it with a green. Like last week I was doing one and I serve it with pea greens. You know, the leaves of the peas, which is this time of year, you know, they're around and they're fabulous, you know. And it's light. I mean, when you think about eating something like chicken parmesan or veal parmesan, you have the protein, then you got, you know, flour, egg, and breadcrumb on it, and then you got sauce on it, and then you got cheese on it. So it's like eating a small farm animal, you know.
Right,
by the time you get done, you're stuffed.
But what I find interesting with that type of entree, the chicken parmesan, veal parmesan, or whatever, it lends itself to a pasta with the red sauce. But when you go with the like veal masala or chicken masala and the brown sauce, that I get lost about when a restaurant offers you pasta because I don't see that pairing with the red sauce.
It doesn't. It's too much.
And that's where the vegetable option kicks in.
No, I think the vegetable option should be I don't eat parmesan all that much. I mean, I have it once in a while if I'm in a place that has it or whatever. But, you know, to have all that red sauce on the plate to begin with, and then another thing over here with a whole bunch of red sauce on it, it's red sauce poisoning, you know what I mean? So you want to kind of like switch it up. I need a different flavor. I need something lighter personally, you know? But I think, you know, escarole beans and a potato, I mean, for me, just greens is plenty, you know what I mean? I think that, you know, once you start adding heaviness to it, you know, I don't want to go home anymore and feel like I got to lay on the couch and moan for an hour, you know, after dinner. So I'm trying to eat lighter. And for me, it's hard because, you know, when I see things on the menu, I want to check them out, right? It's not even about eating. It's about, like, how do you do this and what does that taste like? And that's an interesting twist on that. And maybe I can adapt that into my own repertoire. So I'll order, you know, 5, 6, 7 different things sometimes, you know? That's why my restaurant bills are always ridiculous, you know? My Amex comes in, I'm like horrified. But the bottom line is it's fun for me. And then, you know, you get a taste of something that's really good and you go, oh, well, I'll have one more bite. And then, the end of the day, you walk out of there feeling like Diamond Jim Brady, you know? It's like crazy.
Yeah.
But I guess that's one of the hazards of my trade.
So we should take an early break, but I want to ask a quick question of our listeners. It's actually been quite quiet on the interaction, and I don't honestly know if it's an issue with our email address or people are just...
Just don't like the show.
Maybe. So anyway, we love to hear from you, our listeners, at fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. And we'll take a break. Tom's going to come back and talk about some summer...
Yeah, summer foods. I'm going to talk about a book I'm working on. I got a lot of stuff to chat about, you know, so we'll take
and
that.
And I might
break.
Even take a back seat.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think so, you know. All right, we'll take a break, pay some bills, and we'll be back shortly.
This is Chad Turnbull, a lifelong Long Islander and the founder of Savorian Wines, a local import wine company. This week, I recommend Santa Francesca, a wine produced from Alto Alagir. This region is home to another famous Santa, but without the cost for marketing in each bottle, just added quality. Pick up a bottle of Santa Francesca at Bottle Buys in Glenhead, Bottle Values in Old Bethpage, Bottle Bargains in Northport, Bottle Hampton in Southampton, and Bottles and Cases in Huntington. For more quality wine suggestions, just email me, chad@savorian.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shordell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, so before I get into some summer foods that I want to talk about, because the weather's finally broken, and, you know, we're starting to see some of that stuff come in, I just want to do a little self-promotion. You know, I get this new book coming out, and it's been at the publisher probably for about 8 weeks now, and there's a little issue with the editing. You know, I didn't do such a good job, so I had to send it back, and then I had to redo it myself, and all. And then there was a kind of a delay in trying to hook up with the cover designer and stuff. So it's been road bumpy a little, you know, speed bumpy, I should say, getting this thing through. But I think I'm going to have it out by August or maybe early September. So if anybody, and it's, I should say, you know, my first book, Playing with Fire, was about my 100 wackiest or craziest customers up until that point. And I was going to do something different this time, but it seems like there's no shortage of talent out there. So what we did was we did another 85 or 90 stories, little vignettes about crazy customer things and employee things that I've seen over the years, and just to have a little fun with it. So if you like Playing with Fire, or if you like the articles that I used to write for great restaurants, you may want to pick this book up. And if you want some advanced copies, you can, you know, email us and I'll tell you how to, you know, be able to reserve yours, you know, whatever. Or you just go on Amazon and buy it. I'm sure it'll be in some bookstores around here, the wineries and my restaurants and all that stuff. But it's going to be called The Second Helping. And Steve Vai, the world-famous guitar player, was the guy who gave me the inspiration for the name when he wrote a little blurb for my book last time. And he said, can't wait for A Second Helping. And I thought that was brilliant, you know, 10 years ago when the book was released. And, you know, when I started thinking about a title, came back to me, I'm like, I'm stealing that one from Steven, you know. So anyway, that's what it's called, The Second Helping, and it should be out, like I said, by the end of August. So if anybody wants to get a copy or wants to find out how to get a copy, just email Stu or myself on fire@whli.com. That's fire@whli.com. And we'll give you some instructions on how to get it or mail it to you.
That sounds cool, but you mentioned Steve Vai, and I have to interject. We might have an opportunity to interview another guitar phenom, Joe Bonamassa.
Oh, yeah. Joe's. I'm a fan. Joe's a great player, you know.
So I'm working on that. He's going to be at Jones Beach in August.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Another great player.
And Joe Bonamassa. And hopefully we'll get the opportunity to interview him. I thought you would really be able to... lead the way with that interview.
Yeah,
for
no,
sure.
Well, I can talk a little guitar with him, and you know, every time I watch a guy like Steve play or a guy like Bonamassa play, it just reminds me of how much practice time I managed to avoid in my life. You know, they obviously worked out a little harder than I did. Great players, both of them, and Steven's in the class by himself. He's just completely ridiculous. You know.
Well, I thought it would be interesting insight. You know, the fact that you're familiar with Steve and a boyhood friend of his.
Sure.
And to reflect some of that onto the interview with Bonamassa.
And Satriani, too. Satriani and I, we went to high school together, you know.
Really?
He was a couple of years behind me because I'm older than everybody I know now. But, yeah, he's another great player. I mean, he was actually Steve's guitar teacher as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, he taught Steven how to play. And Joe is a monster in his own right. But those guys, they play a different kind of, like, Satriani and Vai. I mean, I've been playing guitar a long time. I'm no wizard on it, but I'm competent, right? I mean, I can't even approach their stuff. It's so technically complicated and ridiculous. Bonamassa's stuff, I can kind of get a handle on. It was like, I mean, he's a great player. I can't play like him, obviously. But I understand what he's doing, and I can kind of replicate that to some degree, you know. Low degree for sure, but to some degree. And, but those guys are so inspiring to watch, you know. And like Joe, to me, is an inspiration. I look at Joe's playing, and I'm like, wow, man, if I just work really hard, I can get halfway there. I look at Steve's playing, and I want to burn every guitar I own. I'm like, what's the point? You know what I mean? It's just, it's so beyond my reach that it's just, it's pointless.
Well, I look forward.
You know, I inducted him into the Long Island Music Hall of Fame.
Yes, yes.
And I said, when I got onto the microphone, the guy told me, he says, listen, Mr. Shardell, you have 2 minutes. You can't go over 2 minutes. I said, well, I can do that for the first 2 minutes. And then, you know, I'm not responsible because I got a big mouth, you know. But I said to the audience, I said, here's a guy who's probably, what was the word I used? Probably discouraged more guitar players than he's inspired, you know, because he's so ridiculously talented that you look and you go, what's the point? I can't get there anyway. Oh, my God. It's crazy how good he is.
No, it's funny. I remember well when that night that you inducted him because I was going to tag along with you that night. And Kerry had a health issue.
Oh, really?
So I missed out. But if I remember correctly, you were driven down the street in a convertible or
something? We had the ZZ Top cars. You know, they made us it's funny how Hollywood works. I mean, you know, you see the finished product. And it's like sausage making, you know what I mean? They're filming scenes in the end before the beginning. It's really kind of chopped up. If anybody's never seen that, it's interesting to watch. But, you know, the show was the entrance thing, you know. And so it was at the Space Theater in Westbury on Post Avenue where I used to watch Frankenstein movies as a kid, right? So they had us meet behind, like two blocks behind the theater, and they had these ZZ Top cars, you know, these old, like, 40s vehicles with the flames painted on the side and all that, you know. And anyway, so Steven and his wife Pia got in, and Mr. Gene and I got in, you know, and we had to be driven around to the quote-unquote red carpet, you know. And when we got there, you know, there was 50, 60 people in the lobby, and they were going, Tom, hey, Tom, you know, and Steve's going, wait a minute, you know, I'm the guy. I'm like, hey, dude, you know what I mean? You eat three meals a day, you're going to remember me, you know? When did they buy an album? You put an album out once every 2 years, you know?
Well, it's funny. That was back in October of 2016. It's hard to believe. It's almost 6 years ago.
Fast, man.
But as it turns out, Steve's been supposed to be playing Long Island for the longest time. COVID hit.
Yeah, October. He was supposed to play in February.
Yes, and you mentioned that he actually had some surgery.
Yeah, he had shoulder surgery.
But he's scheduled to be back at the Paramount in October this year. And again, I'll be carrying your coattails.
If anybody is a fan of guitar playing at any level, you have to go see him. He makes absolutely ridiculously hard music look easy. I'm watching him. I'm saying, I can do that. And then I get on and I turn into like, are you kidding me? This is like, I injured myself three times. I'm six bars into this thing. You know, it's nuts. You know?
Well, I would love to see you and talk to Steve again as part of our show. But it's also interesting. Steve was one of the first guests that you ever had.
Yeah, he was for,
on
first
the show. Because he's I don't know if you call
beekeeper.
It. Beekeeper.
Yeah, he's a beekeeper.
So it's funny. I met somebody recently that is also a beekeeper. And they're, I don't know, is it called like honey farming or?
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
But they actually harvest the honey, sure. And they have their own line of honey. And in my crazy world, I thought it would be pretty cool if we actually had a conversation with both of them. Is Steve's experience with bees and honey. And
we could have a honey off.
Yeah, a honey off. But And that on top of just your reminiscing with Steve and showcasing his career and history of guitar, it would be pretty cool. But we will see.
The interesting part about Steven is that, you know, there's a lot of guitar players that sound alike out there, you know, and he's got a unique voice. And he's really an interesting guy because it's not only He's a great guitar player. He's a composer. He's actually doing a thing right now in the Netherlands. He's playing with the Dutch Philharmonic, and they're doing his songs, you know. And I've seen he's done it before. I remember there's a YouTube thing of him playing For the Love of God with the Dutch Philharmonic, and you can see these guys really enjoy it because, you know, they play classical music, which is difficult and you know, and it requires a lot of talent. But they get a chance to really, like, you know, step off that train and onto the express route. You
he's
know,
got an incredible stage persona because I think he has one guitar that's like lights up or whatever. And then his guitar, the body of the guitar sort of has a handle and he swirls it around while he's playing. And
they just built him this new thing called the Hydra. It's a three neck guitar. And one of the necks is they have harp strings on it. And two bass strings. One is a regular six-string guitar, and the other one is a bass guitar with the four bass strings. And he plays this thing. It's like, it's so ridiculous to watch. And the song is really cool. It's a good tune, you know? And he's playing the bass, the six-string, and the two harp strings with something else at the same time. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts is all I can say. I mean, I have enough trouble trying to get Hang On Sloopy down, you know what I mean? He's doing three necks with two hands, you know.
Well, don't understate your capabilities as a musician. Many a summer night, I truly enjoyed seeing you and your band out on the stage playing good old Southern rock.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Well, now I'm in the twilight of a mediocre musical career, you know. I'm winding down.
Hey, listen, if not you, what about Johnny Depp? The guy gets, obviously well-known as being an actor, but...
I think he's more well-known for being a divorcee at this point.
Yes, yes. But as soon as he got, he didn't even wait for the court's decision, and he was off to England playing with Jeff Beck. And just yesterday, they announced a collaboration, an album coming out with Jeff Beck and Johnny Depp, which you go, wow, what's this
all
about?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Beck needs Johnny Depp like he needs an enema.
But they say that Depp is actually a legitimate musician. I guess it's all covers on this album, anything from the Beach Boys to other things. And then there's, I believe, two original songs written by Johnny Depp. But from what I understand, Johnny Depp is on tour with Jeff Beck right now in Europe. And he's also been known to be a member of what they call the Hollywood Vampires, which was a group of guys that would just hang out on the L.A. Strip and, like, at the end of the night, just get together and do their thing. But it includes Steve Perry from Aerosmith.
That's Joe Perry.
Joe Perry, yeah. Sorry.
Steve
I'll get
was
it
the
right.
singer. Yeah.
Right. So Joe Perry, Alice Cooper, and a whole array of other guys. And they actually played the Coney Island Amphitheater a couple of years ago, and that was the fateful night that Joe Perry actually had a heart attack on stage.
Yeah, he went down. I remember that, yeah.
I talked to some people from Live Nation, and they actually said he legitimately died on stage,
wow.
And they brought him back.
Wow.
But at any rate,
that's a hard life,
stuff.
Rock and roll. Rock and roll's a hard life. You get too much time on your hands, you know? It's not like you have a real job. You're not working at this 40 hours a week, you know? So, although, you know, you take a guy like Steven, who's constantly composing, you know, so he's in it all the time. He's got a studio called, I think he calls it the Mothership or whatever. It's built into his house, and
but
he's
you know,
in there all the time.
I'm fascinated by music and entertainment, and I heard an interesting discussion the other day. And, you know, you are a musician. There's obviously always been these one-hit wonders, and that's got to be a crazy life because
sure.
You're in the forefront of the public's awareness, and then you disappear
for an
and
hour,
you're just remembered for this one thing that everybody wants to hear.
Spirit of the Sky.
And they were talking about like Don McLean and American Pie, and he doesn't want to talk about American Pie, and they go like, what?
Yeah, neither do I.
Things like that. And I guess Pat Benatar now is going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and supposedly she doesn't want to talk about going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know.
I think some of that's just bullshit.
But what I was getting at is you have artists that, you know, Paul McCartney, Elton John, Paul Simon. These guys wrote all these great songs earlier in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different takes on what they should be doing now. Some artists, they don't mind putting stuff out. They're creative. They want it to be out there. And they don't really care what the opinion is of what they're doing. And then, from what I'm led to believe, you have like someone like Billy Joel who... He's content doing his thing, playing his hits.
Yeah.
If he's writing new stuff, it's sort of keeping it to himself. He doesn't want to deal with all that, you know, criticism. You know,
I don't blame him. I mean, you know, there's a great chef in England. His name is Marco Pierre White, and he was the enfant terrible of the 80s. I mean, he was the youngest guy ever to get 3 Michelin stars. He was completely out of his mind. He had this wild curly hair, cigarette hanging out of his mouth, you know, but he was dedicated to the craft. And his famous quote is, he turned around and got tired of it all and gave his Michelin stars back. He said, I'm screwed this. I'm not doing this anymore, you know. He says, I'm tired of being reviewed by people who know less than me. And I guess it's fair. You know, you're going to have critics out there. But, you know, if I feel the same way sometimes, you know, people ask me, oh, how come you don't make that dish anymore? I'm kind of bored with it, you know, and want to do new things or whatever. So I certainly get that, you know, not wanting to play. I think Van Morrison doesn't want to play Brown Eyed Girl anymore at his concerts or whatever. And I certainly understand. I played it probably as much as he has, you know. And you get to a point where you go, I don't really want to do that tune. But at the end of the day, everybody's screaming for it. I mean, I remember one time I said to the band, I'm not playing it tonight. I'm not doing it. Brown Eyed Girl, somebody calls for Brown Eyed Girl, tell them, no, I'm not doing it. We played it 3 times that night. It was like, all right, whatever. I mean, if you want it that bad, here it is, you know.
So 2 quick funny stories. So we were down in Florida for a music festival, and they had this, like, very young artist on stage. And he apparently was I guess they call him TikTok artist. That's how he got his start.
Oh, yeah.
But the guy opened up the concert with the same song as he ended. And he actually commented on it. He says, I don't know if they're still going to pay me, but I've run out of material.
They only got one.
So I'm going to play it again. As compared to just this past week, Miranda Lambert was down at Jones Beach. And I think they called it the Bandwagon Tour. But it was a band called, I think, Cadillac 4 or Cadillac 3. Which is, I guess, an up-and-coming band.
Right.
And then it was Little Big Town, which is a fairly well-known country act, and then Miranda Lambert. And we had just been down there for the early part of the show. We really just wanted to see Little Big Town. But apparently there was like a grand finale at the end of the evening, and we missed out on this collaboration, but which is interesting because, again, like when you say, you know, things get boring or whatever, but now – when you get to perform it with a bunch of other people, it becomes interesting.
It does. You know, it gets a new life to it, you know. I'll tell you a funny story about musicians. This is the lifestyle part of the show, folks. We'll get to the food and wine part in a minute. But, you know, I took my daughter to England when, quote-unquote, Uncle Steve was playing over there at Royal Albert Hall. He was doing that G3 thing that he does with 2 other guitar players, Joe Satriani. And Robert Fripp from King Crimson was the 3rd guitar player, right? So we're sitting in Royal Albert Hall. I'm excited as hell. All I can think about was all these times I heard about Royal Albert Hall and Cream's last concert and the Beatles played there. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, this is so cool, you know? And I'm like, what do you think? She goes, it's all right. You know, like, it's all right. You're in Royal Albert effing Hall, for God's sake, you know? Anyway, so Robert Fripp comes out first and he's on stage left. And he's like behind the amplifier playing this song, and I'm telling her about King Crimson. I quoted a Crimson King. I had the album. I was played over and over and wore the needle out, you know. And he's playing Whales Underwater. I mean, for 20 minutes, she looks at me and says, how much weed did you smoke back then? You know, I'm like, apparently too much, you know. So then I hear him at the Talk House, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks later, he's playing at the Talk House, right? So I go there to check it out, and he's reading this review of his performance in London, like he's above it all. It was a scathing review about, you know, he stunk the joint up, the whole thing. And he's reading like the critic was wrong. And I'm sitting there going, I don't know, man. A critic might have a point. You know? Anyway, enough of that. Food. Let's talk about food. First thing I want to talk about, soft shell crabs. Absolutely in season now. Every week they're around. Get them and learn how to cook them home. They're very easy to do. You know, you can have your fishmonger clean them for you. They do take a little cleaning, and I'll give you a quick tutorial. When you get the crab, you see where the eyes are. You take a little scissor and you cut the front of the face off, right? And then the points on either side of the crab, you know, and the little points that come out, you lift that up and you'll see like lung material there. You know, it's like a feathery kind of thing. That's like almost like a curved triangle. Just pull that out. You do the same on the other side and you're good to go. That's it. So, and you want them alive. I mean, you know, if you're squeamish about that, have the fishmonger do it, but you don't want dead crabs. So at that point, a little flour, you know, a little olive oil in the pan, quick, you know, 2 minutes on one side, 2 minutes on the other, and you're about to have God's gift to the summer. It's I don't think there's anything quite as sweet and succulent as blue claw crab meat. And the great part about soft shells is you don't have to deal with shells. I mean, you just eat them, you know, because it's already molted. So, and I've had Dungeness and king crab and, you know, what you call it, the claws from down in Florida. Can't think of the name of it right now. But anyway, you know, and they're all good. They're all very good. Blue claw crab meat is, to me, I mean, the epitome, the top, the king, the way to go. So if you can buy them and if you can have them clean, all the better. But take them home and give them a shot. You can grill them also, but it's kind of not the same. You don't want that smoky, you know, grilly kind of flavor interfering with the crab meat. The crab meat is just so pure and so good and so succulent that you just want to do as little as you can to it. And then what I would do is if you're going to fry it like that, mix up a little, make a little interesting remoulade sauce or tartar sauce. And tartar sauce is easy. It's basically pickle relish. I think French's makes it. It's that electric green stuff that you see that people put on hot dogs, you know. But if you don't want that, you can just buy some pickles. And what I'll do is if I make tartar sauce, what I'll do is I'll take a little bit of celery and onion and I'll saute that down. And then I'll mix that in with the chopped pickles and maybe some dill, mayonnaise, and lemon juice, you know, and you have your own little tartar sauce.
Were you thinking of stone crabs?
Stone crabs, yeah. And or you want to do something funkier, you can, you know, you can add a little ketchup in there. You can make it a little red or tomato puree or something like that. You could add a vinegar. You can make an aioli of lemon. You can make a miso aioli, a red pepper aioli. There's all kinds of ways to go. And rather than take up time giving you recipes for all that stuff, the internet's loaded with it. You know, just, you know, you can click on whatever you wanted. And
if you want the recipe, send us an email at fire@whli.com. That's fire@whli.com.
Stu is shilling for emails here. You know, we got to get those emails in. But yeah, it's you know, the internet is just such a wonderful resource. I mean, I wish I had it when I was coming up, you know, for a guitar and, you know, cooking instruction. You know, back then we had encyclopedias, which I didn't need because my ex-wife knew everything.
And you had to buy the yearbook at the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And it would come with stickers sometimes with updates.
Yeah. Oops, that shame. We blew that one. I remember reading one time that in 1904, it was right around the turn of the century, they thought about closing the patent office because they thought everything that could possibly be invented had already been invented. Can you imagine the arrogance of that?
Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, really, you know. It's hilarious when you look back
so
on
wait,
it.
So with all the, first of all, I'm confused about the, I know it's a different variety, but you mentioned Dungeness.
Yeah, Dungeness.
Dungeness crabs and then also the Blue Point.
Blue Claw.
Blue Claw.
Yeah.
But so if you're serving these as an entree,
right?
What's an interesting pairing with something like this?
Wine pairing?
No, actually.
Food pairing?
Plating, yeah.
Oh, I mean, you know. For me, right now, it's as far. I don't know what the date is, but I think June 22nd or something is officially summer. We're in summer. As soon as it's over 70 degrees, I'm in summer. So I'm seeing corn. The local corn isn't in yet, obviously. But, you know, I'm getting some good corn up from down south. And so for me, that summer flavor, corn, basil, tomato, and fish is the classic summer pairing.
Wait.
I use it for lobster. I use it for crabs. I use it for fish.
So then, in my mind, we started to enjoy Mexican street corn.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's served on the cob. But we went somewhere where they actually offered it off the cob. But now I'm thinking what you were talking about. If you have some corn off the cob and some diced tomatoes and maybe some peppers, then...
Yeah, well, what I do is I always take the corn off the cob almost exclusively unless I'm doing a barbecue or something, right? I take it off the cob. And the reason I do that is because we call them corn bones, you know, your cobs. I make a stock out of the cobs, and I use that for soups and sauces. So, you know, we get double use out of the corn that way. But take it off the cob, and I basically just roast it sometimes with a little bit of salt and sugar and some olive oil.
Salt and sugar?
Yeah.
And just regular sugar?
Yeah, regular sugar. And you got to kind of taste your corn first because if it's really sweet, you don't need it. But sometimes you want just a little more sweetness in it. And then what I'll do is I'll saute some like red onions and red and yellow peppers down, you know, and I'll mix that all when the corn is roasted. The other way I handle it is just, you know, most people cook corn too long. It doesn't take very long. I mean, you know, my cooks are always, what's in the steam of the corn? And they got it set on 10 minutes. I'm like, are you kidding? You're going to, you know, take all the flavor out of it. It's a minute and a half, 2 minutes is all you need, you know. It goes very quickly. And all you're trying to do when you have it off the cob and you want to saute it is you're just trying to set the color. So as soon as that yellow goes from that pale corn on the cob yellow to that brighter yellow, you're good. You're good to go. And then what I'll do is I'll take a little bit of stock, vegetable stock, corn stock, or maybe even chicken stock, just a very little, just to kind of wet it, and I'll add a little pesto in it. And so you'll have this beautiful bright green sort of saucy consistency with the yellow corn and some maybe, you know, half cherry tomatoes or sometimes some heirlooms of different colored tomatoes and a handful of basil. And just toss that around, put that on the bottom, and, you know, I'll use sometimes
Talk about purple. Presentation. That's the cover of a food magazine.
Well, it's been on the cover of a couple of magazines, actually, and with the lobster. And then I'll take purple potatoes and make a mash out of purple potatoes. So now you have the yellow, you have the red from the tomatoes, you have the, you know, the kind of purple from the onion, you know, the red onion, the yellow from the corn, obviously, and then the green from the basil. Now you have this purple thing on there. And then if you're going to do a soft-shell crab on top, fine. But if you do lobster, now you have the red and the white of the lobster. So it's really kind of a stunning sort of presentation. And it screams summer to me. So you have the tomatoes, which are in season in the summer, late summer. You have the corn, which is in season. The basil is in season, you know. So you got it all. You got it all. And the crabs or piece of sea bass or, you know, flounder or whatever you want to put on top. So that's one of my go-to recipes that I use. You know, we all have, you know, kind of things. It's, you know, when you guitar play, you have signature licks that you use, you know, for different songs. And you always go back. If you listen to Eric Clapton, you'll hear the same licks, you know, throughout his playing, you know, which is totally allowed, you know. And it's the same with cooking. I mean, you have certain core recipes that you go back to time and time again every year when that comes in season or whatever. But, you know, and you experiment because you'll find your own. You'll find the one that gets you, the one you like. I mean, that one to me gets me because I love the flavor of corn, tomatoes. I love basil. I love lobster, fish, this, that, and the other thing. And I just think they go together well. And now, take on top of that, that pairs well with wines, white wines. You know, it pairs well with Chardonnay. It'll pair well with a Muscadet. It'll pair well with Sauvignon Blanc even, you know. And you, for two reasons. One is the Chardonnay kind of enhances the richness of the lobster or the fish, which is fine because it's like kind of like, what would you call it? You know, putting chocolate on ice cream, you know, sweet and sweet, you know. Then again, you take Muscadet or Sauvignon Blanc, which cuts through, you know, the richness of the fish and kind of balances it out, which is good too, you know. So, you put strawberries on or fresh fruit on ice cream. It's kind of sweet, but it has that, you know, that certain element of tang to it, which kind of, you know, balances out the richness of the ice cream. So it's kind of the same thing. And experiment is a good, it's a good excuse to drink, you know. Different wines, you know, check them out.
See, now I'm scratching my head. I think I've had a revelation here. So if I'm dining and I'm having a couple of glasses of wine, again, single glasses, not talking about bottle service.
Yeah.
I'm probably making a mistake getting two glasses of the same wine.
You are. I mean, you know, if your intention is to just drink something you like, great. I rarely do that unless I'm just, you know, out for, you know, blood. But the bottom line is, you know, I'll always kind of, you know, graze through the wine menu by the glass. If it's interesting, if it's not, you know, you find one and you're okay, I'm stuck with it. But if it's an interesting by the glass selection, why not? You know, I mean, and a lot of places will order for a half a glass, you know, which is kind of fun too.
So I must be a little bit of a,
You want me to adjective you here?
I need an adjective. But like, if I look at a wine list and I see European wines and I see California wines, I will 9 out of 10 times go for the European wine, and I'm probably making a mistake.
Well, I tend to go that way myself. I prefer the style of winemaking in Europe to the style of winemaking in California, and it has nothing to do with anything other than weather.
I found out. I just remembered the adjective snob.
Snob. There you go. But I think that's a noun.
Oh.
Snobby. Snobby. Yeah, that's an adjective.
Your English teacher would be very proud of you.
Miss Sayre, Dr. Sayre, yeah. She actually wrote a little blurb for my book. Because she was a hard-ass boy. I mean, I loved her, though. She made me, I refused to do anything. You know, I was a problem child when I was a kid, right? And she made me make up a year's worth of work in like 2 weeks. Otherwise, she was going to, you know, have me arrested or whatever. She was tough. But, yeah, I think the grazing through the list is the way to go. It's the way to learn. I mean, if you're truly interested about expanding your palate wine-wise, I mean, why wouldn't you do that? You know, especially when, you know, when a restaurant's going to the trouble of offering all that stuff, because it's not easy. I mean, you gotta think about what you're going to serve. You got to buy it. You got to store it. You know, it costs money. It's, you know, so help them out. You know, drink
a
little bit.
I'm in trouble now because, like, I see this flight of wine that I want tonight, the Chardonnay, the Muscadet. And the Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc, yeah. Yeah, they're all fun, you know. I mean, Sauvignon Blanc to me is probably my least favorite white grape. I don't hate it, but I don't drink it that often. But when I do, I tend to drink Sancerre because it's a little less grassy and, you know, they describe some Sauvignons as having flavors of cat pee. And, you know, I mean, cat pee is not exactly what you want in a wine, I don't think, you know. Some people look at that as an asset. I'm kind of like on the other side of the ledger, you know. But, yeah, it's, you know, it's fun to match those things with food. Another thing that I think that people should take a look at now is a lot of the fish that's coming into the market. There's, you know, we've never really been in a better time to be food buyers than, I mean, supplies chains notwithstanding, than now, because there's all kinds of, you know, between air transportation and everything else, you know, you can get stuff that you couldn't get 20 years ago. I mean, I get these beautiful moonfish, these opa from Hawaii, you know, and they're gorgeous, you know, pompano up from Florida. You know, you used to have to go to Florida to eat pompano, you know. You can have it up here now. And there's a great fish market called Graybar, Gra-Bar, out in, I believe he's in Wyandanche now, or North Babylon.
Right, is that where you get your social crabs?
Yeah, I buy a lot of my stuff from him. Yeah, I have two fish guys, but he's primarily the guy. And I've been dealing with Bart for probably 30 years, and he's his fish is second to none. He's fabulously fresh. I mean, I had swordfish on the menu last week, and I bought some swordfish from him that was stunningly gorgeous, you know. And that's not always the case with swordfish. It's a little tricky, you know. Sometimes it's not so good, you know. But his was just phenomenal. It was just absolutely pure white, gorgeous. You know,
when you have swordfish, there is that white flesh, and then there's usually some brown.
It's the blood thing, the bloodline. Yeah, I take them out. I cut them out.
But it's like meat. It's not.
Yeah, it's meat, but it's the bloodline, and it's.
So I should cut that away? I mean, I shouldn't make my plate clean and eat everything?
No, if you like it, fine. But some people find it a little strong for them. You know, it's like the bloodline and tuna, same thing. You know, I just take them out because I don't want to argue with anybody. I don't want to fight with anybody. So it's easier for me to just take it away. It's cutting loss. You lose a little, you know, you can lose a little acreage there, you know. But I think it's worth it, you know. So charge an extra 50 cents or whatever you're going to do, you know. But I think take that out is a good idea. It's, you know, swordfish to me is one of those things where I saw a lot of less than perfect swordfish in my career. And so it's one of these things that I kind of don't order out unless I see it, you know. I remember everybody talking about mercury contents and fish and this, that, and the other thing. We're one of the higher ones. I don't hear that anymore. So I'm assuming that, you know, all's okay, you know, with it. And the stuff I've seen lately, especially from Bart, has all been just spectacular.
So I have a stupid question. What do they do with the sword? You know, the front part of the fish. Do people collect that or?
No, they sell them to the Three Musketeers. Yeah.
I'll leave it to you.
Yeah. D'Artagnan, what are you doing? Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. I have an acquaintance, I shouldn't call him a friend. I know him, but I don't know him a lot well, whose parents owned a restaurant in Montauk, and he was a fisherman. He's a longliner. And, you know, longlining is baiting hooks every, I don't know, 2 or 3 feet on this longline that goes out there. And they leave the line out there, and then they haul it in, and, you know, hopefully there's a fish on every hook. It's not usually the case. But anyway, he was 800, their fish is just 700-800 miles offshore, you know, and the boat went down. Mm. So they all got into survival suits, right? They have those on board that have beacons on them and, you know, everything, and, you know, they're temperature resistant or whatever. And he was in the water for 72 hours by himself, because they all got separated with the tide and all that. He was in the water by himself for 72 hours before the plane found the beacon and they rescued him. Needless to say, his fishing career ended that day and he became a cook. He's in the kitchen now. He's a talented chef. He works in the city, you know. And I imagine you make an awful lot of promises in 72 hours, you know, sitting out there bobbing around in the ocean, praying a shark isn't in the vicinity, you know. Yeah, crazy.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, so like I started to say, I think take a look at fish. One of my favorite things to do is to go to a really, you know, great fish market and just peruse the counter, you know. And you'll see what you like. You know, you'll maybe find something that you hadn't had before. Maybe you'll see a pompano. Maybe you'll see some red snappers up from Florida. And take a shot, you know, because they're all good. If you like oilier fish, you know, mackerel, I like mackerel. Most people don't. Tuna is kind of in that class. A lot of omega-3s, you know, high in omega-3s and healthy as hell. Salmon's in that group.
So my mind wanders. I used to dine at London Lenny's over in Woodside.
Know them well.
And one of my favorite dishes there is a monkfish that they cook in a brown bag. But I was just thinking, monkfish isn't something that you see on a lot of menus. And to me, one of the greatest stories segments of Playing with Fire, I was on my way out east years ago when you were still co-hosting with Malibu Sue, but you were talking about monkfish being the poor man's lobster.
Yeah, that's what it was always called. And it's because of the texture. It has a very, very similar texture to lobster when it's cooked. But now, you know, lobsters become poor man's monkfish because I think monkfish is more than lobster now. It's crazy. That's probably not true at the moment, but it was for a while. And monkfish is kind of a funny thing. I mean, I can sell it, but it doesn't fly. And it's really kind of inexpensive. It's one of the fish. It's one of the value fish out there. If you like it, you know, good for you because you can save some money. And there's different ways to do it. You know, I used to wrap it when I was at 107. We had kind of like a signature dish with monkfish up there. We used to wrap it in prosciutto and serve it in like sort of like a mushroom demi-glaze, which is a beef like sort of sauce with gnocchi, you know. And it sold like crazy, you know. And then I did a monkfish schnitzel with it, believe it or not. I pounded it down and breaded it and pan-fried it, you know. And then we tried also a monkfish milanese, you know, where you'd pan-fry it and do it like you would with chicken and, you know, top it with a salad or something. And all of them had varying degrees of success, but the one that really sold was the prosciutto wrap one, you know. And I had one lady who used to make me take the prosciutto. If I don't eat meat, you know, okay, well, take it off, you know. But that one sold really well. It lends itself, because it's hardy and because the texture is what it is, it's a tough fish. I mean, you can do a lot with it, you know.
What's the fish that, lack of a better description, is the shape of like a veal chop or whatever, but is that fluke? It's like
flounder and fluke, yeah. Flounder, fluke, oversole, they all have that same fish. Halibut's like that too, they're just huge, you know. But yeah. And those, you know, that's as delicate a fish as you're going to get. If you're not a fish fan and you want to break into the club, that's the one to start with because it doesn't have that quote unquote fishy flavor.
Fluke?
You know, fluke or flounder, yeah, yeah. It's different seasons. I mean, they're almost the same fish. I mean, fluke has a larger mouth with teeth on it. Flounder has the smaller mouth with the thicker lips.
The Greek diners always kind of involved with, is it like stuffed flounder? You know, usually with like a spinach stuffing or...
Well, spinach and feta, that's what they stuff everything with, the Greeks, you know. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, the diners to me are...
Is that too overpowering for the fish?
I think so. I mean, you know, but, you know, you give a Greek feta and they, you know, they get all like weepy. It's and I get it. I mean, I love it myself, you know. But it's kind of funny that, you know, diners to me are kind of an anomaly because, you know, I just want to go there, you know, and... How should I say this? I got to be politically correct here. I love them. I think they service neighborhoods. They're the go-to place for a lot of people. I just think they try a little too hard to be all things to everybody. You know, when you look at some of those menus, I mean, there's 400 items on there. You know, you can't possibly do 400 items as well as you can do 200. You can't do 200 as well as you can do 100 and, you know, go down the scale, right? And I understand the breakfast all day thing is great for people who want that, you know. But when I go in there and I see egg foo young, you know, or, you know, some, you know, odd Chinese dish, now they have a whole panini section. And I'll tell you, one of the funniest experiences, there's a diner on Old Country Road in Westbury called Majestic.
Yes.
And that was my halfway spot as a kid when I had a paper out in the morning, right? So in January, I'm freezing your you-know-what's off, you know, out there delivering newspapers. I'd stop there and I'd thaw out, you know, and I had this waitress there, and she was the prototypical diner waitress. Had the teased up hair, blonde, she had eye makeup, wings halfway to her ears, you know. And she was the nicest lady, and she used to make me hot chocolate and a buttered corn muffin, you know, because she felt sorry for me probably, you know. Anyway, so I go there about 2 years ago, right? I stop in there, and I'm talking to this waitress, and she's an older woman. And I said, you know, this is my nostalgic spot. I come here, I get all weepy because, you know, what's her name? She says, oh, you must mean Doris or whatever she said. I said, you know her? She goes, yeah, she was here up until 2 years ago, you know, but she passed away. I'm like, oh, man, I wish I would have seen her, you know. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is I go in, it was like COVID time, right? So they give me a menu that's like in plastic. I guess they were, you know, but it wasn't the usual diner menu that has like 18 pages, you know. So she gives me this one thing, right, that has 3,000 or 4,000 items on the front and then 3,000 or 4,000 items on the back. And on the top, in bold letters, it says, limited COVID menu. I almost wet my pants. Limited. Limited. What are you missing? There's nothing here. Every cuisine is covered. Every animal's covered. Every vegetable is covered. It's so cute, you know. But they are the great places to go. You know, I don't think people order half of the stuff that's on the menus there. You know, you go to, what do you eat in a diner? You eat eggs, you eat salmon, you eat a Greek salad, you eat a hamburger. That's pretty much the hot list, I would think. Maybe a chicken sandwich or something like that. But they get involved in all this other stuff. It's funny. I don't know what that is. I'll have to check that out. I'll have to ask my Greek friends, you know. So, anyway, we're getting close. Getting close to the end.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Yeah. We got a minute or two left. And so to reiterate this whole, you know, summer food thing, it's all coming. I mean, please don't serve tomatoes from the store. You know, go to the farm stands. You know, at the end of July is when it's really going to happen. And if I live among the farm stands when I'm out east sometimes because my daughter's evicted me from my house. But there's farm stands out there all the time. And you take a road trip. I mean, take a Sunday afternoon and go out there, and you see these tomatoes that are grown right, you know, locally, and the corn that's grown locally. I don't think there's any better corn anywhere in Long Island. And even some of the stuff that's starting to come out now, the strawberries, the peaches, you know, Long Island peaches are ugly. They don't look like those California peaches. They're not, but they are so much better than the ones that you find in the store. And that's my take on today's show. So I think we're going to close the show with Tom's three keys to life.
That's unique.
I know. I mean, would you want to do it? Or should
no, please.
Okay. All right, then stop interrupting me. Which are, life is too short to drink bad wine, treat every meal, and I'm not kidding, every meal like it's your last, because it could very well be, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
This is Chad Turnbull, a lifelong Long Islander and the founder of Savorian Wines, a local import wine company. This week, I recommend Santa Francesca, a wine produced from Alto Alger. This region is home to another famous Santa, but without the cost for marketing in each bottle, just added quality. Pick up a bottle of Santa Francesca at Bottle Buys in Glenhead, Bottle Values in Old Bethpage, Bottle Bargains in Northport, Bottle Hampton in Southampton, and Bottles and Cases in Huntington. For more quality wine suggestions, just email me, chad@savorian.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming, personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.